This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Second violation. Rivers took his time bringing it up the floor and didn't get across the timeline in 8 seconds.
Good pass. Melo was so surprised he was that wide open. He was expecting Porter to be on his hip, and he airballed a two-footer.
Rebound tipped. Taken by Decker, and Decker's got a clear pass. Oh, he falls down! A clear path to the basket of the Garden crowd.
Another embarrassing moment.
Place to Be Nation, welcome back to PTBN's NBA Team Podcast as we go to part two of our 2019-2020 season preview. I am one of your co-hosts, Andrew Reich, and I am joined by Mr. Adam Murray. Adam, do you need to get your second wind in, or do you feel like we still got a lot of work ahead of us?
Well, we have a work ahead of us, but you know what? We have good teams, finally. It's just really hard to get through the bad stuff and be like, look, there's no hope for any of those teams. It's just going to be a long season. You got 20 wins ahead of you. You know, wait till 3 years from now.
Great way to just totally poo-poo on part one. I mean, some of those mediocre teams were kind of interesting to talk about. You know, like, the Dallas Mavericks, the Pelicans, the Kings. There's a couple of them that actually kind of piqued my interest. There are a lot of bad. I ain't going to lie to you. There, you know, when we did our bottom feeders, it was about eight teams.
Yeah, and those are the ones that are hard to get through. If that's a quarter of your league, it's just god awful.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just kind of that way. But, you know, there's been a lot of talk going into the season about the parity that we're probably going to have. But you don't necessarily mean that – you don't think that necessarily means that there's going to be more decent teams. Is that what you're trying to say?
There's parity as in there's parity in baseball where you – oh, it could be one of six teams that make it. Well, yeah, but you still have the Pittsburgh Pirates who are never going to do anything. You still have the Florida Marlins who, you know, they bought their championships and now they're just going to be god-awful. Like, they're still going to be very bad. It's hard when, you know, our plan is to tank for 4 years. Well, if four other teams are also tanking with you, it makes it twice as hard because everybody has the same cap money. And, well, everybody knows, well, your team is awful. Why should I want to play there? I'd rather take a little less and be with a winner.
Yeah, and then you got a lot of teams that get sacrificed. You know, a star player league goes to another, you know, goes to a more lucrative team or a team with a better location. And, you know, that other team, that team that loses the star suffers. You know, Charlotte's an example. You could say the Pelicans are an example, even though they gained Zion after losing AD. Oklahoma City from losing Russell Westbrook. Like, there's a lot of teams like that. But these teams that we're going to be talking about in this first segment, because we're going to split it up, these are teams that we're almost like 90 to 100% certain are going to make the playoffs. You think that's a fair number? Do you think that there's, barring catastrophic injury, like a certain, there is a smaller percentage or certainty that these teams are going to be in the playoffs or we're going to be watching them come May or April?
Well, these are teams who are one step away from being, I think, in the elite group as well.
Mm-hmm.
Just one, since there's so much parity, there's so much. You know, who's the there's like six teams that have legitimate championship aspirations. And this group is just one trade away from adding themselves to the list, I think.
But do you think there's like an emperor's has no clothes situation where there's one team that we just don't expect will be mediocre? You know, kind of in that tier that we talked about in the previous show.
There's always that chance where everything can come up tails. Every bad scenario can happen. Every bad loss just happens. You know, that it happens. Look at the Celtics last year. They're supposed to be Eastern Conference champions, and then, oh, their chemistry just killed the team, and they just became mediocre.
Yeah.
Did you predict it? No. So it could happen to any of these teams, but...
That's a good segue, because that's the first team we're going to be talking about is Boston. You know, Kyrie Irving is out. Kemba Walker is in. Outside of that, you know, they made some draft picks with Romeo Langford and Grant Williams, and then they signed over Enes Kanter. Did you like that signing? Because you're the Celtics fan, the resident Celtics fan.
The problem is they got smaller, and they have no center. Enes Kanter was the best they could get, given the money they had, which is none.
Horford.
They did not expect to lose him, I thought. Nobody expected him at 34 to opt out of his deal. his, you know, was it 25 or 30 million? Like, oh, nobody's going to pay him. And all of a sudden, well, here comes Philly, huh? But Celtics took a major step back, but this is the rebuilding because everybody is just super young. You have Hayward, who should be back from his injury now. You have Walker in his prime, and then you just have a bunch of young people.
Hayward's back from his injury, but he just did not look right at all, like, coming back last year. Do you think – I mean, you know, that happened to Kevin Garnett where he didn't look right after his after he came back from his injury, and then maybe like a year later he started to kind of get his step back. Do you think that that's going to happen with Hayward, or do you think that that ship has sailed?
Well, that's the hope, is it was just a 1 year. They tried to force him back, and he just couldn't, you know, couldn't do it. So, well, that's all you can do is say, well, we hope he's back full-time. If not, it's just an albatross of a contract.
The focus will be Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown. Jaylen Brown is actually going to be eligible for an extension, and we'll be seeing if that's going to be possible for him. Do you think that they're going to seal the deal there, or do you think that they're going to let it hang around?
Well, they don't usually give extensions, so that's their – it's tough because you know some team is going to try to max him next year, and it's like, well, is he a max player? I don't know. Talent-wise, offensively, no, but defensively, he play, you know, he's a two-way player, which is super rare, and that's going to get paid. So the problem with the Celtics is they'll be fun to watch.
Yeah, Kemba Walker can provide things that Kyrie Irving did not. He can do, like, he can average 28 points a night. He can do that.
They just have no starting center and then no backup.
You don't like Daniel Tice?
Tice was good as the backup. But yeah. Him and Cantor, and then you have Robert Williams, and then all these rookies. Like, you like Carson Edwards, but he shouldn't be playing 25 minutes. Grant Williams, you liked. He shouldn't be playing 25 minutes. Romeo Langford, I don't think anybody
but
likes
this is
yet.
This is more of the Brad Stevens mold, like, versus last year where it was sort of kind of like a super team. Like, he's going to play a lot of guys that you don't expect. Remember how he would play Semi Ojeleye a lot of minutes? So you never know. You might see a lot of Grant Williams. You might see a lot of Brad Wanamaker. You never really know with Stevens. He likes to run his rotations. But 48.5 wins is the over-under from what I saw in the last sports book. And they had 49 wins last year, so it's about on the same level. Do you think that they'll be on the same level as last year?
Well, last year was an underachieving 49.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
So I think it's about on par. That okay. Seems fair.
But under or over?
I'll say a little over.
A little over, okay. Let's move on to another team that made some big changes. They actually got Kyrie Irving in free agency, the Brooklyn Nets. Now, this comes with the asterisk because, yes, they signed Kevin Durant to a Supermax, but Kevin Durant's let me ask you this. Is there absolutely any chance Kevin Durant steps on the floor as a player for the Brooklyn Nets this year?
No, I believe he also said he wasn't going to.
Well, people say that, but then they get the itch when the playoffs come, you know?
Yeah, but then you come back and you're terrible.
So that's Kevin Durant.
Yeah, but the players are also rusty, so I think they don't want to, you know, ruin their image of... They've seen, you know, the superstar, well, just mentioned Gordon Hayward again, not come back at full speed. And it's just like, oh, I don't want to be that guy. Paul George, when he came back from, his injury, his playoff run was, he didn't look kind of good. So do you want to go into an offseason of questions of, well, he was kind of okay?
I don't want to say Brooklyn gutted their lineup, but they definitely had to make some subtractions in order to bring in Durant and Irving with all that cap space. So D'Angelo Russell is out, and Kyrie Irving is in. Do you think Kyrie is an upgrade over Russell?
No, I think it's about the same.
Okay. You think Spencer Dinwiddie, Joe Harris, Caris LeVert, Jared Allen, those are the ones that kind of stayed over from that nice supporting cast that was able to build up enough clout to get these free agents to believe that they had enough talent around them to succeed. That's why they signed there. So do you think that those four were like the right choices? Like, they, you know, like Jared Dudley's gone, Ed Davis is gone, DeMar Carroll's gone. Do you like that nucleus that they, that was the word I was looking for. Do you like that nucleus that they have around Durant and Irving?
Well, they got rid of all the character people. They got rid of all the good locker room people, the Ed Davis mm-hmm. and Gamara Carroll. They replaced them with just, you know, Torian Prince, who was a good young guy. But other than that,
signed Garrett Temple, signed DeAndre Jordan. Jordan was more of a buddy system thing. He was friends with Durant and Irving, so, and they needed a center because they lost Ed Davis.
They did. That sign doesn't make much sense because he, you know, is of the old NBA, and he's not going to really provide much, I don't think. But it's just, yeah, you're relying a lot on Harris and LeVert and Prince and, you know, Roderick Harukes and, you know, Donzan Musa to sort of be your nucleus. And it's just, well, okay, Kyrie traded a group of young people for a group of young people.
Yeah,
so
but
I
this,
don't think they're going to be.
Different group, it's a different group of young people. That's what you're kind of, the hope is with Kenny Atkinson, that they can make this work.
That's the hope, but the thing is now we know Kyrie, what he is. So it's a very buyer beware system right now with Brooklyn.
Their over-under is 44.5 wins. I'd go over. I'd probably say maybe like 48, 49 wins. I am more optimistic about the Nets even without Durant because I think Irving can carry them to a couple of wins.
I'm also optimistic as well because it's the East and there's a lot of garbage in the East, so there's a lot of easy victories to be had that aren't going to be had in the West.
Mm-hmm. One last question. Do you think Joe Harris learned anything from his Team USA campaign? Do you think he can maybe do an have an MIP campaign?
No.
Okay.
Don't forget, USA finished 7th, their worst place ever, so it's not like he learned much.
Aw. Let's move on to the Western Conference for the Denver Nuggets, who is one win away from the Western Conference Finals. I mean, they had a really good run there. We can kind of compare them to last year's team anyway because they didn't really make a lot of changes. They got Jeremy Grant in a trade, and they lost Trey Lyles and Isaiah Thomas, who barely played. Outside of that, it's pretty much the same. They stood pat. They put the option on Paul Millsap to keep him for another year. They maxed out Jamal Murray on an extension so that they could keep him in the fold. You know, Nikola Jokic is their star. They got Gary Harris, Mason Plumlee, Will Barton. Michael Porter Jr. is finally going to debut as a rookie there. Juancho Hernan Gomez. It's pretty much the same crew. What do you like about this Denver team that you saw last year?
Well, the problem with the Denver team is I don't think they were supposed to finish second place. They had their expectations were way too high on them, and they had never, you know, these were kids who had never been in the playoffs. All of a sudden, well, now you're the number two seed. You're supposed to go to the finals. Huh? We don't know how to play. We don't know that it's different. So it's good that they kept the team together because a lot sort of hinged on Millsap. If he goes,
I will say the Jokic Murray, like 5-1 role is really hard to stop.
Oh,
because Jokic is such a great passer.
That's why, and so he's the only one that does it. He's so unique. And, you know, you have Harris and Barton who just have their roles.
Yeah.
And they're also very deep. So, you know, Malik Beasley and
Craig.
Yeah, Craig and Gomez and Monty Morris. They lost some of their depth. They got rid of, you know, they let Trey Lyles go, but you got Jeremy Grant, who I think you were used to be a fan of. I'm not sure if you said
he's very athletic. He's very athletic, kind of like a tweener. Some people say that he could play the three. I see him more as a four.
I think a lot of it comes on Michael Porter, because they need somebody to replace Millsap next year.
Yeah, and I think Porter could probably fit in as like a backup or maybe a third string behind Millsap.
Yeah, but they'll need him to develop. He can't just injure himself again because they have a very tight window with Millsap.
Is Jokic a top 15 player?
I believe so.
I mean, do you like that slow-mo game that he has? Because the one thing I will say is that they definitely slowed down the pace for Jokic, and they were a much more improved defensive team under Michael Malone.
He's the only one that does it, so.
They had 54 wins last year, 51.5. That's high. I'll still go over. I think that they'll probably have another successful campaign. I don't really see a lot of missteps here.
I'm going to go under because you have a lot of new power in the West that you didn't have before. So I think just because of that, it's going to be a little more difficult.
Murray is one of my favorite guards to watch. He's one of those guys who just makes impossible shots sometimes. So keep an eye on him. We're going to go back east to the Indiana Pacers. Victor Oladipo, what's the word on him? Do they know when he might be back?
No, he's not going to start the season, but
I mean, that was a pretty bad injury that he got. Was it a broken kneecap or?
It was very painful. It looked You have to go slow. You're not going to rush back from a leg injury with, you know, it's an obscure leg injury. That wasn't ACL. It was just, oh, it was a kneecap.
Yeah. They did make a lot of wholesale changes there. Now, they kept what they really coveted. Miles Turner, he got an extension. Domantas Sabonis is there, even though he's going to be a restricted free agent pretty soon. Doug McDermott, they're kind of stuck with because they signed him last year, along with some of the rookies like Aaron Holiday and Edmund Sumner. But after that, they kind of made some wholesale changes. They bring in Malcolm Brogdon, TJ Warren, Jeremy Lamb, TJ McConnell. They have three TJs on this team. Do you think that's weird?
Very weird. Also, their moves are weird. You could see it. It's like, okay, this is a very complete team, but you paid a lot for Brogdon. TJ Warren,
He's a born scorer. That's just what he did in Phoenix.
And then, you know, McConnell, you know, who overachieved in Philly. It's a very strange mixture of a group yet again. I could see it's like one of those, the parts all fit, but, you know, it's just strange to...
Well, the hope is for Brogdon, because you think that he can take that leap as a star. That's
they're hinging on. So,
Do you think they'll miss Thaddeus Young and Bojan Bogdanović?
They'll miss Bogdanović.
What, because of the shooting?
Because he was, you know, yes, his shooting, and he's also, I don't want to say he was under the radar all the time, but he never really got, he did everything.
Can Miles Turner be a star player? I mean, I think he's got some moments where he looks like he can take over a game, but you don't see it like from game to game.
He just hasn't taken that leap yet.
Okay, but he's close. He's close.
But it wasn't close. He was supposed to, but didn't
yet. Okay. I feel like if they get Oladipo back with Brogdon, Turner, Sabonis, and then, you know, a pretty deep bench with, all those kind of holdovers and McDermott and McConnell and Lamb. I think that's actually a pretty good team when Oladipo's back in full. Until Oladipo gets back in there, Nate McMillan is just going to have to stitch it together with some of the new arrivals, and hopefully they can fit in. 47.5 wins, I'll actually go under. I'll probably say somewhere around maybe 42 to 43.
I'll go under as well, only because until Oladipo comes back. Once he comes back, and
because they definitely the swing of things, overachieved in the first half of the season last year, they were a complete shock of how good they were.
Yeah, and then they played 500 ball to the end of the season, and that's why they sort of.
Let's move on to the Miami Heat. They did a weird thing in the summer. What happened is they didn't make. It doesn't look like they made a lot of changes other than signing Jimmy Butler. But what happened is they had to move around a few parts in order to make Butler fit on their salary cap because they have so many set contracts. So Hassan Whiteside and Josh Richardson had to be shipped out. Whiteside to Portland, Richardson to Philadelphia. Those two were integral parts of last year's Miami team. Now, Miami's team last year did not make the playoffs. It was also Dwayne Wade last year, so no more D. Wade. How do you feel about the Butler signing?
That is a huge move that
it seemed like they couldn't make it. That's why they had to maneuver Whiteside. One fear is that I don't know if this is the makings of a really good defensive team. Now, Butler is a good defensive guard. So if you have him at the lead along with Dragic, James Johnson, and then maybe Kelly Olynyk, I think you got the chance of having a good defensive team. But I don't think it's got the makings of a good defensive team the way that we've seen Spoelstra's teams in the past.
That's why I think this isn't the last. This isn't the
team. Okay, you think they're going to make some changes there? Oh, we didn't even talk about Myers Leonard being back in the fold there. Okay,
there'll be more changes.
42.5. That's the over under. They had 39 wins last year. That's actually. I'll give it a push. I'll just go 42-43. Yeah,
I'll say push because that's Jimmy Butler factor. Number. He'll will them.
We're going back east, or back west, sorry. And we're going to go to the Portland Trailblazers, who went to the Western Conference Finals last year. They did make a few changes, though, obviously. C.J. McCollum and Damian Lillard, they inked new deals. Lillard, 4 years, 196. C.J. McCollum, 3 years, 100. Did you have a problem with them getting sealed up for another 3 to 4 years together?
That's their backcourt they like. They re-signed Rodney Hood. They, you know, they're going in as Zach Collins. They got Whiteside.
They got Kent Bazemore, but I'm not sure. Is Bazemore going to play?
Yeah, he's going to play because it was just a Evan Turner, Kent Bazemore swap. Look, they make the same money. Let's try something different because Evan Turner didn't do anything. You got Gasol, Nurkic.
But a lot of those guys that we always talked about were kind of like Miami situation, those contracts that we've always felt like were sort of kind of jamming in the way of them being able to make some flexibility, like Al-Farouq Aminu, Mo Harkless, Evan Turner, like you mentioned. They're out. You know, they're out. Now they did also have to, in order to make some moves, they sacrificed some of the other smaller contracts that they had that they, you know, for players that they liked in their rotation. Jake Layman, Seth Curry, Myers Leonard, they're gone.
Yeah, but again, they, you know, saw the landscape. Okay, Anthony Davis is coming in, so we're going to get Whiteside. So we need a big who can
play. Well, I think Collins has a future. I think they really like Anthony Simons. That's another one that I think that if they can give him some playing time, if McCollum sits or Lillard sits, then they feel confident with him. Nasir Little comes in as a draft pick. Anthony Tolliver is a really good veteran. I think you're going to see more of Tolliver than you expect. You know, Whiteside gives you, what, 2.5 blocks and like 11 rebounds right off the cuff. So it's like, you know, you get immediate impact there. This one's interesting. They had 53 wins last year. They're at 40. The last over-under I saw was 46.5. I'll probably go over there. I think they're a 50-win team. Okay, let's move on to the San Antonio Spurs, who just always seems to hit the over no matter what, because no matter how much you want to count them out, they just seem to reel themselves back in. First, I want to talk to you about, you mentioned Team USA. Greg Popovich coached that team. Do you feel like, did you feel like that hurt Greg Popovich's legacy, that he coached that team to a 7th-place finish?
And that's the problem with the Spurs now is, we, you know, they got DeRozan. You have Aldridge.
They re-signed him.
They re-signed him, which is just like, why? And then, you know, DeJounte Murray's
going to that's going to really help relieve Patty Mills. They had to play Derek White a lot more last year because of the absence of Murray. Now, with Murray coming in, you got a kind of a deep backcourt with Mills, Murray, White, and Bryn Forbes.
Yes, but they're going to be splitting the one and the two because they don't have a true shooter. Also, you know, they put all their money in on DeMarcus Morris, who burned them for some years.
Well, they got Damari Carroll instead, is that right? Or is that Trey Lyles that they got?
Yeah, and is that really an exciting thing? No. And Carroll, he's the good, you know, nice glue guy, but he's not the player he used to be. As we've seen, he didn't fit in Toronto. Like, oh, maybe he can, you know, do better in Brooklyn. He was decent.
They also rely on depth, not necessarily because they're always a deep team, but it's that all for one, one for all type of scenario. So you'll see a lot of Jakob Poeltl, you know, a lot of Marco Bellinelli. Lonnie Walker IV showed a little bit of upside as a rookie, even though he didn't get tons of minutes. I would definitely expect him to get more minutes. Outside of that, you know, we'll see how much we see out of Trey Lyles. I don't know if he's really got a I don't know if he's a great fit on this team, but we'll see.
I will take
that. I never go under on the Spurs, so I'll just say they'll get 45.5 is the over-under. I'd probably say I'll just say 47 and be safe. I just don't think they never underachieve, ever. Let's talk about this. Now, this is the one team that I sort of had objection with, and that's the Toronto Raptors, the defending NBA champions, but without Kawhi Leonard, which is a gigantic, like, what if there? I don't even know if this is a playoff team. Maybe I'll just be I'll just die on that hill, but I just don't know if this is going to be the kind of team. Sure, they got Kyle Lowry back, which they gave him a 1-year extension. Marc Gasol's back on his last year. Pascal Siakam, Serge Ibaka, Fred VanVleet, all that whole crew that won the title with Kawhi, they're back in the fold, but Kawhi's gone.
Yeah, you lose the best player, top 5 NBA player, yeah, you're going to take a step back, and you're like, well, they should be in group 3. I'm like, no, because you still have Gasol, Ibaka, and Siakam, who are still a very
it's a good front court, but I mean, in the East, there are some games to be had, for sure, like we mentioned in the...
And then Kyle Lowry, and it's like, well, if you're talking, like, well, do you think Orlando could really beat Toronto? Who's better? Like, well, Toronto's better than Orlando. Okay, do you Detroit? Who do you think's better? Well, Toronto's better than Detroit. And it's like, well, Toronto sucks, but then you compare them against other East teams. It's like, well, yeah, but they're better.
The other plugins that they got at the small forward position to try to help them out, even though they're not, you know, they're definitely not even close to sniffing the type of, you know, wins above replacement that Leonard was, is Stanley Johnson and Rondae Hollis-Jefferson.
Yeah, they're taking flyers on them. They're, you know, it's one of those, let's try to buy low and hope something mm-hmm. turns out of one of those guys.
So we'll see. See if a change of scenery helps him. Same with Stanley Johnson. So, Fred VanVleet, do you think he's taken two huge steps, but he does have moments where he sort of disappears and then he just comes out of nowhere and just has like a great performance. So do you think Fred VanVleet can be like a reliable everyday type of guard? Well, that's what I was about to say. I don't know if he's going to be a backup anymore.
I think you got to put Norman Powell as the starting mm-hmm. two. I mean, I need, because VanVleet can play point, Norman Powell can't, so.
Did you feel like, you know, it was weird because he became the head coach, you know, after Dwayne Casey was fired and Leonard was put into the mix, so it was sort of the Kawhi show. But did you feel like Nurse has a certain niche that he carved out for himself in Toronto, or do you think we're definitely going to see more of that niche without Leonard? Because he has to sort of rally the troops in Toronto.
Yes, he has a niche because, as you mentioned, it was VanVleet mm-hmm. who stepped up.
I think they'll be like a 40-win team. I think this is the one team that we're talking about in this group that might miss the playoffs. The last one in this group is the Utah Jazz. Now, Utah's, I don't want to say they took a stab at it, because bringing in Mike Conley in a trade, you know, for Ricky Rubio, it wasn't exactly like a blockbuster move, but bringing in Conley, it does feel like it was the missing piece for Utah.
Bringing in Conley, also, we're not done with that. Bringing in Conley is the, you know, because he was in Memphis, so he never had a chance to do anything being stuck in Memphis, and having Conley takes it away from Donovan Mitchell mm-hmm. having to do everything. Because with Ricky Rubio, it's like, well, we like you, but okay, Donovan, your usage rate is going to go way up. Just do whatever you want.
You're saying Donovan Mitchell's not a point guard?
The problem is they've left themselves weak mm-hmm. on the wing now, because there's no Joe Ingles.
Well, Ingles is a point forward. He's going to come in to back up Conley. So when Conley sits, then they'll let Ingles run, kind of be the distributor.
Jeff Green and Ed Davis.
Well, Davis kind of replaces Favors. That's kind of, it's almost a push there.
Exactly. So it's one of those things like they could be in group one, but
it feels like this is one of those teams that the first team, it's, you know how they have those PER type of starting, like 5-on-5 type of lineups, and, you know, death lineups, and people compare like what are the best death lineups for all the teams in the NBA. I feel like Conley, Mitchell, Gobert, Bogdanovich, and you can just change whatever you want in that last position. That will be a killer lineup for Utah. Yeah. Like, I think that's a team that could probably, like, drag them to, like, maybe 50 to 55 wins. Now, the over-under is 53.5. Conley is an incredibly underrated three-point shooter. So you bring in Conley and Bogdanovich to shoot threes, along with the defense from Gobert, Mitchell as a superstar. I think that's enough to put him over the top. So that's going to put the bow on this segment and this crop of teams, but we've got a lot more to go to, and, you know, we got the top of the heat.
Yep, we'll be back after these messages. Hey.
Hey.
You know, they have lots of weekly shows in the PTBN pop feed.
Oh, yes.
First off, JT and Leanne are here for Emergency Pop Goes to the Couch, talking Jersey Shore, including Ron Ron's arrest, Jenny being shitty, and more.
Who's Ron Ron?
Ronnie?
Please don't tell me you watch Jersey Shore.
No, but I have coworkers who do watch it.
Oh my god, you watch the Jersey Shore. That's what you just said.
No, I don't watch TV at all.
No, you watch it by osmosis, because other people talk about it, then therefore you know about it.
I know names.
Okay.
I don't know. Trust me, I haven't watched TV, and that's not Peppa Pig. In months,
you've been in the baby zone. Yes, hot dog, hot dog, hot diggity dog.
No, we've moved on from Mickey Mouse Club. It's just straight Peppa Pig.
Okay, Peppa Pig.
The Hard Traveling Fanboys continue their annual Walking Dead month with guest David Sunday as they discuss season 10 premiere.
Okay.
Agreed.
I'm sorry, I don't have anything on The Walking Dead. I can't believe it's 10 seasons long. It just shows how strong the show has been on cable.
I don't think it's the show is strong. You just have a very loyal fan base who is just sort of keeping it afloat. It doesn't have that same buzz it used to.
Correct.
But as we're here in October, Scott continues to look at the classic Universal monsters. Guess what year he goes back to this time? That's right, 1933, The Invisible Man. Keeping it current as he always does, Scott Crisculo.
Well, I mean, The Invisible Man has always been the one. Didn't Chevy Chase do The Invisible Man one year?
I'm sorry, I'm not up on Chevy Chase.
Okay.
Unlike you, apparently. But just keeping it current. Maybe he'll get to color movies one day.
Oh, man. You're just picking on Scott.
We love him. DC for You kicks off a month of DC Comics' best horror offerings with a list of Russell and Todd's favorite scary DC stories. Plus, look at Keanu Reeves' Constantine from 2005.
I kind of remember liking that movie. I don't know if you ever saw it.
Negative.
Okay.
This Week in the NFL is weekly as well, with Roger and Johnny recapping the last week of games. I was going to say episodes, but football doesn't have it. It kind of does have episodes now with the refs sort of choosing who they want to win.
Yeah, it does feel like a saga, especially because you and I are Saints fans. What do you think of Teddy Bridgewater? How is this happening?
He's decent.
He's a good game manager. How did he become such a good game manager?
He always was.
Yeah, but he was bad when he filled in for Breeze the one time against the Panthers.
Well, I mean, really, what backup QB goes in going, okay, they're going to call me in, I'm going to do something.
Well, you know, he came in cold against the Rams and he stunk. So a lot of people were kind of like fearing for the worst. And then he wins four games in a row.
Well, look at Pittsburgh. They have
Well, Mason Rudolph almost died on the field like a week or so ago.
Yeah, that was the strain. Like, he went down way too easy. But him, they're high on him as the backup. He came in cold as well, stunk it up, and then all of a sudden, no, let's give him a week. And before his TKO, he was doing fairly well, you know, game management. So it just takes a little bit of.
Well, what's fascinating for me with the Saints, because I don't want to turn this in, I don't want to turn this like this promo spot into like Saints talk. But what it is that they completely changed the complexion of the team because Sean Payton was smart. He realized, okay, I've got to win with defense, great special teams, and I need to run the ball and be conservative. And if I can just manage this right, we could probably just squeeze out a win every now and then. I didn't think they'd go on a winning streak without Drew Brees. That's where.
Yeah, but you say that, but Kamara has done nothing with Bridgewater.
Numbers wise, no, but he's been effective and he's gotten first downs.
He's been effective, but
defense. The defense is where the difference has been.
The offensive line has shifted now because you know Brees would get it out in 3 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas they know, okay, well, we have to wait for Bridgewater. So yeah, it's a different mood of the team as we continue our tradition of our reads are longer than our episodes.
Yes. What did you think of that Packers? Because you hinted at the Packers Lions ref problems.
Cleveland had ref problems. Every game, the Saints have ref problems. There's always the refs are just getting worse and worse and worse, and it's becoming a really big issue.
Well, not only that, the fact that they've only had one pass interference replay call reversed. So why even do the rule if you're never going to reverse it?
Even though it's completely obvious. And even the, let's go to our booth executive ref. Oh yeah, it should be, that's clearly this.
I think that's a big F you by the officials. They never wanted that rule in there. And because it was added, they just say, all right, well, we're not going to uphold anything.
Unless the guy like literally knocks him down and
correct.
Or just rips his jersey, like, oh, we're not going to call it if it's close. Like, but
but the NFL's been weird. It's been a little bit of a weird year. You think Kansas City's good? Nope. You know they drop a couple, and then you know you think that some teams are out of it, and then they start to come back. Who are the only teams that are left undefeated? San Francisco and New England.
Yes, and Roger and Johnny will cover that in their podcast.
Oh, yeah, let's plug that. Yes.
Ah, siblings Kevin and Mary host the Brother Sister Rewatch podcast. On episode 20, they bring you The Office season 3, episodes 11 and 12.
Season 3 is a good one. That's the one with Rashida Jones.
On Sunday Groove, David welcomes Tim Capel back to the show to discuss the 80s song tournament and the 80s music they love.
Oh, I love it. Tim Capel's the greatest. So yeah, I'll big shout out to that one.
Which we know Sweet Child of Mine was the winner.
Good for Sweet Child of Mine. But they had a lot of candidates.
Yes, every song from the 80s was technically eligible. Andy Scott, Dr. G, and John D'Amato are back to discuss the year in pop, where they discuss sports, news, and pop culture. And since Scott is on it, 1978.
1978 in pop culture?
The sports, news, and pop culture of sports, 1978.
Sports, news, and pop culture. So the basketball championship in 1978 was the Bullets. The Bullets beat the Sonics. That was when the great Elvin Hayes was the Bullets' top player. Do you remember who coached the Sonics?
No, because I wasn't born in 1978.
Lenny Wilkins. Lenny Wilkins coached them.
He coached a lot of teams.
He coached the Sonics. The Sonics had Dennis Johnson. You remember Dennis Johnson, a Boston fan?
Yes.
Gus Williams.
Here's an over or under. Is this read going to be over or under 10 minutes?
I don't know. We're pushing for it, huh?
I have to loop the music a lot on this one.
Okay.
The greatest song we've already mentioned. Brand new podcast feed brought to you by Jennifer Smith, Jenny Position, which we're trying to angle to get ourselves on.
Yeah, so I'm gonna have to negotiate that. We're still in the negotiation phase.
The home
phase.
Of Geek and Sassy, Talk and Pop, and Freak Out Drive-In is also there. Also, it's October, so a lot of Halloween horror themes and everything. And then, of course, we know it's all... It has to be all Halloween Havoc on the wrestling feed, right?
I don't know. I don't know. There's so much going on with wrestling, with like AEW launching their new show, with NXT competing with them, and then SmackDown going on Fox. A lot of people are sort of focused on the current product for the first time in a while.
But I mean, if Scott's there, they have to go back to Halloween Havoc, right?
And then you had the Spooky Fiend Seth Rollins Hell in a Cell match that was like the ending was a complete disaster and everybody was poo-pooing on it. So, you know, that's sort of your spooky match of the month for WWE.
But check out PlaceToBeNation.com for all the deets.
Yes, all the hits. And we're back, Adam Murray.
Yay!
I tried to swing that to you, and you kind of whiffed off. You were like the guy that on that, you know, when they're doing the carousel with the open 3-point shooter, and you just kind of like, you know, it's like it just stops, and you're like, oh man.
It was one of those, like, you know, the sports talk shows, and all of a sudden, let's cut to this guy. I didn't know I was supposed to be talking right now. I thought you were going to have some sort of usual monologue like you do, but all of a sudden, just talk to him. I'm on camera. Oh, okay.
Okay. Now, these are the heavyweights. I don't want to say that this is like the elite level, because I feel like that, you know, I do feel like this is the part of the show where we always joke about parody and how it doesn't really exist in the NBA and how teams aren't, you know, there's always a top tier, and then there's the has and the has nots. And it's never going to change in the NBA. And that is true. But I do feel like in this tier, when we're comparing these teams, these are teams that when it comes to which team do we think will be in that elite level, it is actually pretty close. Like I can make a legitimate reason find legitimate reasons for all six of the teams that we have in this last segment to be, and like one of these teams to be above the other. And we could just go round and round and round and just complain about why we don't think this team is better than the other team until we really see more results in the regular season.
Yeah, that's why we have a group of six here.
I know, but what I'm saying is that usually it was like the Warriors and then everybody else, or the Warriors and the Celtics and then everybody else. It doesn't really feel like that this year.
No, now, this we're just, is one any of these six have legitimate legitimate.
Correct.
Yet, so
correct. Now we never really had that. We haven't really had that in the last few years, I would say. We'll start with the Warriors, no longer the defending champions. That championship resides at this point in Toronto. But obviously a lot of big changes in Golden State. Kevin Durant is gone. Andre Iguodala is gone. They took that flyer into Marcus Cousins and he signed elsewhere. They bring in D'Angelo Russell as a guard. Klay Thompson signed a max extension, but he's going to be out with that ACL that he suffered in the finals. So we don't – I would probably anticipate Thompson being back around March, maybe February or March.
Agreed.
You know, all-star break. But until then, no Thompson. So it's Curry, Russell, Draymond Green, Kevon Looney, who re-signed, and then a brand-new bench to start the season. How do you feel about this version of the Warriors?
The problem with all these teams is you can see they have a legitimate chance. You also have things that make you cringe.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you have D'Angelo Russell. Yeah, you're going to get
Now, Russell's an all-star in the East. He was a terrific player for the Brooklyn Nets. This is not exactly like a consolation prize.
No, it's just one of those how is he going to sort of fit type things. You're
I think him and Curry can do like a Blitzkrieg type of lineup where they put them both out there to just drain threes. I can see that.
You're getting Thompson back, you know, all-star break. But after that, you have, you know, Kevon Looney, who showed up last year in the playoffs but hasn't showed up prior to that.
I think he's overrated as a defensive center, but I think he's one of those players that just – he fits well with what the Warriors do, so he was more valuable to the Warriors than he would have been with anybody else.
And you have, you know, Cauley-Stein, who is a talented player. It's just he had mental issues with chemistry issues.
He's got physical issues too. He's going to be out with a foot injury to start the season.
Yeah, and – that's the problem, is he didn't, you know, he already has an attitude problem. And then it's just the usual, like, who is going to be their bench?
Glenn Robinson III, Alec Burks, they drafted Jordan Poole and Eric Paschal, and then Jacob Evans is a second-year player.
Bench is always a question mark, but, you know, you replace Durant with McKinney?
Alphonso McKinney, who played, he was kind of there. He was there, kind of fill in the playoffs. But what happened was when the Raptors played him, McKinney would get destroyed. So they had to find a way to hide him in the lineup. That's why you saw so much of Quinn Cook. Now Quinn Cook is gone too. So is Jordan Bell.
Yeah. So it's just you have a lot of just blah.
Does this feel like an aftermath? I mean, this isn't exactly Tim Floyd's Chicago Bulls or like Rudy Tomjanovich's LA Lakers when Shaq left. It doesn't feel like that. Like, I feel like this team can be hyper competitive. Like, this is a team that could probably just zoom their way to a 5 or 6 game winning streak on a good day.
Yeah.
You know, and they got the home court, the new Chase Center. We'll see how that goes. Curry, I mean, look, it's all talk, but Curry's been talking about how he physically and mentally feels like he's at the best shape of his career, even better than the MVP seasons of 15 and 16. So, do you feel like Curry can sort of be the one that kind of carries the load until Thompson comes back?
There's no reason he shouldn't be.
I mean, we're talking about a guy someone who could average like what Harden did, something around like 32 points a game and, you know, 8 assists, like, you know, feeding it to Russell. Like, I could see that happening, you know. And then when Klay comes back with Draymond, now you got a good lineup. And it just depends on what kind of record they have by the time they get Thompson back, and if it takes a while for Thompson to get kind of back into shape. They had 57 wins last year. The over-under is 48.5. I'll go on side of caution and go under, because I feel like they are going to struggle in the first couple of months of the season with their chemistry, and I think their bench is just not very good.
I'll go over.
You'll go over there? You think Steve Kerr can conjure the magic?
I mean, all I have to do is just – if Curry is going to go off, you can't – nobody can stop him. If he's going to go shooting 60% from three, well, okay, that game's – you can't – that's what he does.
I mean, he would you call D'Angelo Russell a pseudo splash brother?
No.
Then what is Russell going to provide for them? Like, what do you think he can do?
I don't know. That's the thing is,
that's why this team's a mystery to me. Like, I'm not exactly sure what we're going to get.
Because when you know, year one when they had Lonzo Ball in L.A., they tried to move Russell off the ball, and he didn't do that great there, and he was just a point guard in Brooklyn, so you're not going to move Curry off the ball. It's just, again, a weird, how will this team mesh? We'll have to sort of just wait and see.
Still, like, tons of talent there at the top. Let's move on to the Houston Rockets. Now, this was a team that seemed like they didn't have a lot of room to make changes after they signed Chris Paul to that huge contract. And then, bing, bang, boom, they made a trade with the Thunder to get Russell Westbrook in exchange for Paul. Outside of that, not really too many changes. They bring in Tabo Cephalosha, Tyson Chandler, Anthony Bennett, Ben McLemore.
Bennett already got cut.
Yeah, exactly. Like, there's really not a whole lot there other than Westbrook. Westbrook is a big one. So how do you feel about that big two-man group between Harden and Westbrook? They obviously worked together or played together in Oklahoma City, but that was eons ago. Harden was a completely different player. Westbrook probably was too. Do you feel like someone is going to take a step back? And if so, why do you think it's going to be Westbrook?
Because Westbrook has to adjust his game to the Houston system. That's pretty much the only if and but about it. Harden.
Yeah, but Mike D'Antoni's in the last year of his contract, and they have not negotiated a new contract for him.
Yeah, and that's sort of why is if this falls apart, well, you're the only one that we can blame now.
Mm-hmm.
Because we've given you everything we possibly could. We got you Chris Paul. You failed with him. We got you Gordon and Ryan Anderson. Well, who knew Ryan Anderson would be terrible? Oh, everybody. He failed with them. It's just like, okay, here's Westbrook. And, you know, oh, well, can the two play together? They didn't the first time. Well, yeah, that was also when they were 23 and thought they could be super. Now that they're older and they realize what it takes, oh, well, yeah, we can now sacrifice for a team.
Yeah, but Westbrook in Oklahoma City was a special kind of stubborn. He would average a triple-double just because he could.
Yeah, and like, the third of the triple-double would be turnovers.
I know, but what do you think is going to be different about Westbrook? Like, I don't want to see a passive Russell Westbrook. That's what I'm
because
afraid.
Because the system is set up just to shoot a quick three. Oklahoma City was, Westbrook, you have 24 seconds to do whatever you want.
Do you think James Harden was tired of averaging 36 points a game and carrying the team? Do you think that was the reason they brought in Westbrook?
Do you think
that Harden is comfortable being the overload type of scorer?
Harden is fine being the volume scorer. It was just sort of Chris Paul not being able to handle the heavy load the playoffs. He'd always
and taking
out.
A big and also taking a big step back offensively. Defensively, I still think Paul's good. Offensively, I think he took a step back.
Well, it's just age is slowly creeping up to him.
Mm-hmm.
So what's their over under?
The over under on them is 53.5, which is actually about the same amount they had last year, which was 53 wins. You know, they still have, like, a pretty good nucleus. Now, Gerald Green is probably out for the year with a Liz Frank injury, so that's going to be a sizable loss on their bench. But, you know, Austin Rivers is back. Daniel House is back. P.J. Tucker, Eric Gordon signed an extension. So it's kind of it's the same team just with Westbrook. Do you feel like that they have enough to really push through, basically have a better record than the Warriors, have a better record than the Lakers? Like, do you feel like that they can make that big push?
No, 53 wins is about right, I think. Because it's just, you know, Westbrook is going to lose them some games. You know, Harden's going to shoot him out of a few games. Mm-hmm. And it's the West, so it's a lot tougher. So,
who's going to lead the team in assists?
Westbrook?
Okay, who's going to have more rebounds? Remember, these guys were neck and neck for MVP about 2 years ago.
Clint Capella.
Okay, not counting that. I totally skipped that. not counting Capella. Who do you think will have more rebounds?
I don't know. They'll probably split them if they feel like playing.
I mean, James Harden is going to be the leading scorer. He's going to be like a 30 to 33 point per game type of scorer. You know, it's just we saw that last year with Paul George in Oklahoma City. Like, I can see Russell Westbrook taking a step back scoring wise and just trying to do the rebounds and the assists. But I don't see Russell Westbrook doing the same thing he did in Oklahoma City. I just don't think it's possible for him. You know, it's just different from what he did for Paul George and conceding to Paul George. This is conceding to James Harden. James Harden runs that team.
Yeah. So this is what we, you know, you got what we got.
So let's go on to the LA Clippers. Boy, this is going to be interesting. Kawhi Leonard, Paul George signed there. They did have to make a couple of concessions in order to bring in Leonard and George. So they lost Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, Danilo Gallinari, and Garrett Temple. But outside of that, they re-signed Patrick Beverley. Lou Williams is still in the fold. Bontrezl Harrell is still there. Jermichael Green got re-signed. Ivica Zubac got re-signed. Landry Shamet is there. There's a lot of potential here for the Clippers. A lot of the potential has been centralized on how good they can be as a defensive team because of how good defensively Kawhi Leonard, Paul George, Patrick Beverley, and Montrezl Harrell can be. And when you put them together in a lineup, now you're talking about like a potentially elite defensive squad. Where do you feel – like how do you feel about the Clippers right at this point?
The Clippers, I think, are the number one – seed going into it because they have depth. You have Lou Williams, who by all accounts should win Sixth Man of the Year again. You have Patrick Beverley, defensive superstar. Shamet, defensive guy.
Amazing, like Sixth Man.
You have, you know, George and Leonard. Leonard will probably play point half the time. And then you have Harrell, Green, Mo Harkless, but Harkless could provide minutes.
Yeah, they drafted Kevin Gelly, Jerome Robinson they really like.
How many teams can we say has depth, all these superstar teams? It's just like, well, they have their you know, their this big group, and then you have nobody behind.
Well, here's the reason why. The way the offseason always works out, you have to sacrifice your depth in order to get the star. And that's how it happened with the Warriors. That's how it happened with the Lakers. There's only certain teams that are able to sidestep that and keep their depth and only give up a couple of pieces in order to gain those stars. Rarely do you see a team that can get two superstars, including the finals MVP Kawhi Leonard, and not really give up that much of their bench. That's what's scary about the Clippers, especially with Doc Rivers coaching the team, who has already coached to a championship before in Boston. So you have a guy who can at least say, I've got a ring. I've been there before. You can follow my lead.
So what's their over-under?
Their over-under is 53.5 wins. I'll definitely go over. I think this could be sort of on the level of what the Bucks did last year, where everything seems to go right.
I will say slightly under.
Okay, totally.
I'm going to go over, but like 54, because
I think this could be like a 57, 58 win team.
With the Celtics, they're like, we don't care if we play on the road. We can take a few nights off and rest ourselves. Mm-hmm. So I think it might be that we don't need to go the Warriors, but we need to win 65 games.
George had a kind of a interesting year last year. He was second in scoring for in the league. Was very, very high volume shooter for the Thunder. How do you feel? Here's the thing. Leonard was high volume in Toronto, but he also was able to take a step back and kind of be not a distributor, but be the defensive force and let other guys get their shine. How do you feel it's going to work out scoring wise between Leonard and George? Because I know that's not necessarily their mantra, but somebody has to be the alpha dog.
Do they?
Yes. Someone has to be the leader.
Do they? Who was the leader of the Celtics, you know, Ubuntu team? It was a team concept. So I think if Doc Rivers can preach that team concept again, they could both buy into it. And yeah, we could be, you know, 1A, 1B.
Okay. So you're saying that if George leads the team in scoring and Leonard is like the defensive force, that's not necessarily a bad thing.
Not if you're winning.
Okay. Let's stay in LA and we'll talk about the Lakers. This is just how weird of a team is this one?
I'm not on the Lakers train like everybody else is.
Okay.
Yeah,
the Anthony Davis, LeBron James 1-2 punch isn't enough to get you over the hump.
Because you have Dwight Howard.
Okay.
Is your DeMarcus Cousins.
Well, Cousins is out with a torn ACL, so.
Yeah, he's your backup, and it's just like, he's burnt bridges literally everywhere he's been, and he's been in a lot of places recently.
You don't think there's a vengeance factor there for LeBron? Missed the playoffs, finally has a great, not a sidekick, but a great complimentary piece to really bully other teams that have sort of lost their luster, like the Warriors.
If you miss the playoffs and all those people are now gone.
I get that, but what I'm saying is that I feel like LeBron's got a little bit of extra motivation, and that's a dangerous LeBron.
Yeah, but then, like, what's this rest of this team? You have
Danny Green,
Rondo and Quinn Cook.
Mm-hmm.
You have Avery Bradley and, you know, Danny Green. Oh, yeah, Danny Green was good, but...
JaVale McGee, Jared Dudley. Kyle Kuzma is the one guy that they really desperately wanted to keep in the trade, so that's why you didn't see him go, but you did see Brandon Ingram go, Lonzo Ball.
Is he going to play? Is he going to be the starting two? And everyone just going to sort of run through him?
I think he'll be like a three.
Then, okay, Dwight Howard, he's going to play. He's going to be content playing 15, 20 minutes a game.
He's going to have to be. His career is teetering on being completely like irrelevant. So yeah, he's going to have to be accepting of the minutes he gets.
It's just a team that is just going to be LeBron and Davis, and I don't see depth to really put them sort of through.
They have depth, but it's a weird type of depth because we don't know how the pieces fit. That's what I worry about. Like, JaVale McGee can be a decent center for them, but then you got Dwight Howard and Anthony Davis, so, like, where does McGee fit, you know? And then you got Rondo, and behind him, like you mentioned, Quinn Cook, but they're completely different players. Rondo is the non-shooter type of distributor. Quinn Cook is a scorer. So, like, where's the fit there? You got Kentavious Caldwell-Pope and Danny Green and Avery Bradley. It's just very, very weird. But at the end of the day, I think people are just so obsessed with the stars. They see LeBron, they see the unibrow, and they think that that's just going to cover all the blemishes.
So also,
new head coach Frank Vogel. They had 37 wins last year. The over unders that I saw last was 48.5.
I'll go over.
I'll go under. I'll be safe and go under because I do think that they're going to have – the only thing is, like, Anthony Davis does get his little nicks and knacks on the injury front. If he sits out even 10 games, you know, that's going to put a lot of load on LeBron. And now I do feel like they're – you know, I don't want to poo-poo on the previous version of the Lakers when they had Ball and Ingram and Josh Hart and Lance Stephenson. I felt like they had some okay pieces that just didn't – mesh well, but I don't want to say that this new version of the Lakers is like a much better bench, but I do feel like that they have a little bit more strength talent wise in their depth than they did last year. Would you agree?
I said they have no bench, and you just said they have a stronger bench, so we are already disagreeing.
I think their bench can be okay. I just don't know how chemistry wise is where I worry. I just don't know if it works. That's my biggest worry. I do feel like they have some pieces there. But my problem is Davis.
On to additions by subtraction.
Okay.
We have Milwaukee.
Well, Milwaukee, this is a pretty good one. We're going back to the East here. We got two East teams on this one that we got left. No Malcolm Brogdon. They lose Nikola Mirotic to Europe. They traded away Tony Snell because they didn't really use him. But at the end of the day, you re-sign Chris Middleton. You bring back Brooke Lopez and George Hill. Giannis Antetokounmpo was the league MVP. He's probably going to get a supermax next year. Where is what is the ceiling on Giannis Antetokounmpo that right now?
I think we're there at MVP. You can't be any better than that.
Oh, I think like Curry in 2015 when he was MVP and then he went up another level. I think Giannis can do that. I think Giannis is probably going to work on his outside shot. I think that's going to be the next step. He's going to take threes.
Well, he has to because, you know, we knew you couldn't sign Brogdon and Middleton and keep both of them. One of those had to go.
Mm-hmm.
And so now their starting two is they going to have Wesley Matthews is going to, you know.
Well, Matthews is sort of a small forward, a little bit more of a small forward, though.
Yeah, but him and Middleton are going to sort of – like, what are you – yeah, where's your two going to be? That's, you know, you're going to be a very big team.
Outside of that, they pretty much fortified their roster. You know, they bring in
stealing Robin Lopez and Brooke Lopez is
– Well, let's get this straight about Robin and Brooke is that some people on the who are more casual would think that they're kind of the same exact player because they're twins. Robin is more of a bruiser. He's a rebounder. You know, he can get some blocks. Brooke Lopez has turned himself into like a pop five, like a guy who can just go out and pop threes out.
But both are underrated.
I think Brooke is properly rated. I think Robin is underrated because he's played on some teams that didn't necessarily
make it shine. He was the throwaway in everything, and he was the one, you know, he did very good for LA.
Do you think they can get away with playing Pat Connaughton a lot like they did last year when they have that little bit of that hole, that two position?
They're going to have to because
– Unless Dante DiVincenzo really makes a jump.
You know, Kyle Korver doesn't really inspire anybody at this stage. He's just going to give you what he gives. Ilyasova is solid backup. DJ Wilson.
We haven't really seen it. Under Mike Budenholzer, he might get cut. You know, I mean, that's sort of the way that Budenholzer coaches. He likes to coach a system.
And then they took a flyer on Dragan Bender because they have no young people anymore.
Yeah. The only other small thing was that because they lost Brogdon as a point guard, they bring in Frank Mason the third as a back.
That's not even worth mentioning.
Were you surprised that George Hill signed back? I know it was for less money than what he was originally opting out of, but he gets more years. Like, do you think that Hill was a good fit for them? Because he's, you know, the thing about Hill, and this is why he worked in Cleveland, this is why he works everywhere he goes. He's not necessarily like a great defender. He doesn't have great shooting percentage, but he always seems to like have that height to be able to defend and stay in front of people. And he seems to blend well with whatever guards that you pair him up with, like Eric Bledsoe this time.
Well, the difference is, remember, he took the money to go to Sacramento and immediately regretted it.
Yeah, and they traded to Cleveland, right?
Yeah, because he was a quick malcontent. So taking the money is not always the best option. So I think he's like, well, this is the best chance I have to go back to the finals. I need to hop on this train.
With Brogdon gone, how much of an offensive jump does Eric Bledsoe have to make? He showed his defensive prowess last year, made all defense. But offensively, I feel like he's got to show more because he has his moments where he does get exposed because he's not able to put up enough scoring.
He asked if there's nobody else, no other backcourt. You know,
I'm not trying to pick on Bledsoe. He's a really good two-way player. It's just that I think offensively he's just got to show a little – he's got to be more consistent. You know, it can't be all on Middleton and Giannis, Giannis can handle pretty much anybody.
What's their over-under?
They had 60 wins last year. It's 57.5.
I'm going to have to go under on that as much as I don't want to.
You think they'll take a step back, you're saying?
Not taking a step back. It's just
well, if you're winning less games, you're taking a step back.
No, but they highly overachieved last year.
I don't think so. I think that team properly achieved. I felt like they underachieved in the playoffs. Like I didn't feel like they showed enough moxie in the Eastern Conference Finals. That was
They didn't know how to. They didn't know. You know, they haven't been in the playoffs. Mm-hmm. They haven't gone deep, so they don't know how to. You know, inexperience is his own worst enemy.
I didn't feel like they were challenged properly by Boston. I was really disappointed with that series in the conference semis. I didn't feel like it was the clash that people expected. You know what I'm saying? Maybe that left a bad taste in my mouth. I just wanted to see the Bucks get challenged. You know, that was the only thing that worried me. And then when they finally met a challenge in Toronto, they couldn't handle it.
Because they'd never seen it, whereas Toronto's like been there, done that. We've hit that glass ceiling so many times.
Correct.
But
we got one more East team. Let's talk about the Philadelphia 76ers. This is going to be interesting. I just want to get it right out the way. This is 54.5 wins. I'm going way over on this one.
Oh, that's the thing is, yes, but...
Are you worried about Embiid's injury history? Is that what it is?
It's not his injury history. It's his desire. Like, oh, I can play 35 minutes. I need to play every day. It's just like, Horford is great insurance for that. Yeah, Kyle Quinn is a huge signing.
Let's get this out of the way with Philadelphia. I don't think they bolstered their bench just a little bit, but just like last year, where they gutted their bench and really just killed it with their starting five, I feel like we're in the same exact situation with Philadelphia. The only difference is that, you know, you just mentioned Kyle Quinn. They drafted Matisse Thybulle. They bring in, you know, Zaire Smith is actually going to actually play some for them. I feel like their bench is a little bit better, but it's at the starting lineup that we really need to talk about Philadelphia.
Well, they got Trey Burke as insurance, you know, the super insurance around Neto, who, you know, had a few minutes in Utah. Mm-hmm. It's just, yeah, you know, Mike Scott and Kyle O'Quinn. The thing with them is, it's this team is who they are, and do the pieces all fit?
I think they will, because I think Josh Richardson, who they got in the trade because of the Jimmy Butler kerfuffle with Miami trying to move pieces in order to get Butler to sign there. I think Richardson can fit well with them defensively. You got Embiid, Ben Simmons, Tobias Harris re-signed 5 years, $180 million, and then you talk about Al Horford going there for 4 years, $109 million. That is one hell of a top starting five right there. That's a starting five that defensively could really put a stop to anybody.
Yeah, but also it's a no spacing on that team. Who's shooting threes?
Tobias Nobody. Harris would be shooting the threes.
But he's not a three. It's not his game. Mm-hmm. Like, they're going to be shooting threes. Al Horford will be shooting threes pretty much the most time. And that's the thing, is this team just doesn't – I don't see spacing on this team.
And no point guard, which is fine because you got Simmons and you got Horford.
Yeah. Okay, I get it. You're just going to be a very big team. But it's just like, yeah, you see it on paper. It's like, oh, yeah, that looks really good. But it looks like, you know, it was a trade made in the end, you know, in the Fantasy Manager. Where, okay, on paper it looks good, but can they play 82 games together?
I think if Embiid and Simmons play like 70 to 80 games, I mean, 80 games is not possible for Embiid, more like 70. If Simmons can play every game and then Horford can play every game, I feel like Philadelphia will be like a 60-win team. I think they're going to dominate pretty much all the teams they play in the East.
Yeah, they probably should.
It's just – I just like the makeup of that team. That's a team that I think, you know, under Brett Brown, they were so close against Toronto. I felt like they actually pushed Toronto pretty far.
Yeah, I think they did, but also Brett Brown, I don't think, is the guy who's going to lead him over that hump. I don't think he's that good of a coach.
I don't think he's getting fired, though. I mean, they're gonna wait.
Yeah, he's not getting fired, but who has he developed?
Like, Ben Simmons.
But Simmons always was that guy. What has Ben Simmons done new that he didn't do in his half a year of college?
Are you saying he's going to develop a jump shot? Never going to happen.
Name me one thing he's developed. Embiid was always, you know, Embiid now wants to shoot threes. And it's just like, go ahead, because he can't make them.
Mm-hmm.
So has he developed Embiid? Like, where is these great leaps? You know, we don't even need to get into Nerlens Noel, Okafor, and, you know, all the other parts of the process. Like, I don't think he's a great coach.
Okay. I don't know if it's necessarily his job to develop the players. I think it's more of his job to just try to, like, not necessarily. What I mean by that is that Embiid and Simmons, yes, you want to try to develop them, but I don't necessarily think it's all on Brett Brown of whether or not, you know, Ben Simmons develops a jump shot or Embiid becomes a defensive force and doesn't take plays off. Like, I don't necessarily think that's something that we need to put at the feet of Brett Brown. I think that's more of a – those are two superstar players. I think that's more of a motivational thing where they need to try to look in the mirror and try to get better. You know, Joel Embiid had some issues in the playoffs where he either looked winded or it seemed like his knees were not all there. I mean, was there any issues that you saw out of Embiid in the playoffs?
Oh, he just sort of looked winded.
Okay, just winded. You don't think it was necessarily like a load management scenario?
No, I think it was just like because he had never, again, more inexperience is his own worst enemy.
Mm-hmm.
If you've never been here, well, then I'm going to try to turn this up to 11. I don't really have an 11 or know where this 11 is. Okay, they're just sort of running through me right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, Embiid, what it is Embiid has the usage rate of a superstar, but can he be that superstar when they need him most? That's where Kawhi Leonard was such a terror in the playoffs, because his usage rate, the higher his usage rate went, the more efficient the team was. I don't know if that's the case with Embiid and Simmons in Philadelphia. You know, now, but here's
built the, to, they're built to win this year.
They are.
Two
but that's
three
what I'm
years
saying.
Down the line, they're screwed.
If Embiid and Simmons sit out some games, they're still all right. You know, because you got a little bit of a better bench. You got Tobias, you got Horford, and you got Richardson. That might be good enough to win against bad teams.
Yeah, it should be. I guess, you know, it's just one of those, like, yes, on paper they hit every check mark, but unlike the Clippers, it's just like, well, I don't have confidence in this Philly team the way I do have confidence in Clippers.
So you go over or under? I went over.
I'm just going to say probably over because somebody has to win 60 games.
Okay. I can see – I am pretty confident they're going to be like a 55 to 60 win team. Pretty confident. Whereas with the Bucks, I can see them taking a little bit of a step back, but I don't know if it's going to be really sizable. You know?
Well, that's the thing is everybody can't have 55 wins.
Yeah, you know, I mean, we talked about some other teams already in the East, like, you know, Boston we think is going to be okay, you know, there's a few other ones that we could talk about that are going to be all right, but it's in the West that it's kind of the most interesting in terms of wins, because it's going to be a little bit of a bloodbath.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so let's just finish up with a couple of awards here. MVP, do you have a pick?
Curry.
You stole
he's,
it.
He's good. You could just agree. It's not stealing if you just big. Yeah, you're kind of right.
I'll go with them. I'll take a. I'll go a little bit outside the box. Joel Embiid.
You could just say Curry. It's fine.
Nah, I have to disagree. Rookie of the year.
Well, Zion has all the hype, but if they can make the playoffs, he should easily win it.
Okay. No chance for Ja Morant?
No, because that team's not going to do anything, so.
Okay.
He's a point guard. Point guards are very tough to get.
We're not talking about sixth man of the year because Lou Williams is winning that. Defensive player of the year. This is another one kind of like Lou.
Gobert.
Good. That's what I was going to say. I mean, do you think anyone but Gobert?
No, probably he should easily lock it down if he's still the same player he is, which there's no reason to believe he won't be.
Okay, and this one's always hard when you start at the beginning of the season because you're really not sure. Most improved player. It's just so hard because you don't really know, you know?
It's too early to give that because we don't know who's going to be used, like you just said. We don't know the way rotations are going to fall and who does anything.
Can I say a real dark horse even, and it might get laughed off of this show. Andrew Wiggins.
If he has motivation, yeah. You could also say Luka Doncic is on the Giannis plan and he can easily be MIP and just go to a whole new level.
Yeah, but that means that Luka would be like a 25-8-6 type of
You don't think
player.
He can't be?
No, not this year. Maybe in year three, not in year two. You know, I'll give you one. I'll give you another one that will totally wow you. Markelle Fultz. What if Fultz just all of a sudden is a really good point guard in Orlando and he fixes his shooting issues?
Well, you can't give a most improved player to a player who's played like four games in his career.
Mm-hmm. It always happens to a guy who's in a team with a lot of depth, like Siakam was, and he kind of just rises above it. You know, it's kind of like Bam Adebayo and for Miami, but that's a little bit obscure. Like we're talking about one award, you know, here, but MVP is sort of the most interesting one. You went with Curry, I went with Embiid. I don't know. I mean, the only problem with Embiid is that can you give MVP to a guy who misses like 12 to 15 games?
That's the thing, which I don't think so. Not when there's like Harden out there who's still going to be scoring 35 points. And we'll do one final one.
Okay.
Does Carmelo play?
No.
I agree.
I think he's finished. Where did that come from? That came from out of nowhere.
Well, you know who else is finished? Us in this episode.
Yes, this is over. it was a nice preview, though. It was. I'm really looking forward to the season. I don't even know what the tip-off games are, but I'm just glad that basketball's back. That's the real gift of it all, Adam.
It'll be fun to watch.
Yes. On behalf of Adam Murray, this is Andrew Reich. Take care, guys.